welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we're in North London, and for the first time ever, we have a repeat guest. Now, this is a funny story, as the first time I strolled a mile with this gentleman, he said he wasn't sure what he'd bring to the podcast, and I beg to differ. We spoke about the topic of power, what it means, and how much of an effect ultra-processed food has on our bodies, both mentally and physically. He's a medical doctor and has one of the most infectious personalities. He's a friend of mine. And 2 years ago, this gentleman was slightly overweight, single, and in his own words, unpressed. We are talking about the crinkle in his clothes. Today, I am welcoming back Dr. Zand, as a lot has changed in the past 2 years of his life, and he is now walking proof of the effects, and I want to know his secret. Zan, how are you?
I didn't realise I was like your first repeat guest. That's an amazing honour.
High five for that.
Thank you.
Honestly.
I feel like that brings, especially, I hadn't realised as well that what we talked about last time was ultra-processed food, which I now feel like I spend my entire life talking about.
That's kind of surreal. First of all, congratulations. You are freshly married.
I'm like a fresh out of the packet, newlywed. What am I now? We're July or yeah. So I'm like 2 months in.
Has life changed?
It is the best thing ever. It's difficult to describe. I would say that being married feels like I have a permanent contract on the best team in the world. Like I've joined a team, but it's just me and one other person. And I guess it's our whole families as well, but I feel like they've signed me. They're never going to let me go and we can do anything. It's really, really amazing. That sounds a bit sentimental, doesn't it? But
yeah,
it is true.
That's so cool. That's what I'd like to dream that married life would be like. It's like just you and your best mate.
I know people who've gone, oh, I think I'll just settle. I think this is okay.
Oh no.
True love is not for me. It's all right. And I just think, and that I felt, I think the last time I saw you, I was like, you know what? This isn't going to happen for me. It's fine. I'll just be single and that'll be it. In my mind, I had this idea. My obituary was going to say he is survived by his only son. And I thought, that's okay. That's all right. And actually that wasn't all right. Now everything's brilliant.
That is so, so mega to hear. You did turn up on a tandem today. Do you permanently ride around on a tandem on your own when Dolly isn't around?
I would say the most sickening aspect of dealing with like us as a really in love, kind of very together couple is that we arrive everywhere on a tandem. Well, I got it as an engagement present. I thought it would be kind of fun for a couple of days and we'd probably put it back on eBay. And instead we use it like to go to the shops.
The reason
I'm on the tandem on my own today is because I dropped Dolly at the station. I'll go and pick her up on the tandem later on.
That is serious couple goals right there.
I want to be intimidating to other husbands.
Yeah, you are. I think you are intimidating.
That's
all
good. That's
winning. And especially the fact that you turned up in a hot pink cycling jacket. More respect.
This is like our team uniform, like we both have one.
No way.
Yeah.
I think I want to get one of these team uniforms.
It's good.
I do just need the husband to go
Someone
with that.
Someone needs to be on Team Fuller.
It's all right. We've got the wife.
For me, that's true. And that's someone.
If you know, you know.
Katia Jones.
Last time I saw you was in Australia. I was privileged enough to sit in the audience and surprise you under our own esteem alongside Dolly's great scheming. You're kind of a big deal in Australia when it comes to Operation Ouch.
I think that was what maybe the most surprised I've been in my life. One of the most surprising things that's ever happened to me. I got into the dressing room and what happened? Oh, our manager said, look, there's a couple of, and they were really, the manager did it really well. She came in and she said, it's a couple of fans, they're really annoying. I'm really sorry. I know you're done. I know you're tired, but can you just go and say hello quickly? And we went into the dressing room and it was you and Katia Jones.
In Perth, in Australia.
Mind blown. Like you, I just had not, in my mind, you were thousands of miles away. And Dolly helped you organise it, I think.
Yeah.
It's very odd. I don't know. We got invited to come to Australia by some Australian producers. And they said, come and tour Australia. And we thought they meant school halls. And then we sold out the Sydney Opera House 6 times in a weekend.
Casual.
I don't know how, there's no way of saying that without sounding boastful, but Operation Ouch is the best thing I do. I'm so proud of it. I mean, I love everything I get to do, but making telly for kids, particularly kids who are ill or kids who are worried about their health or kids who've got relatives who are poorly. It's amazing. And, it, you know, obviously it's not just me and Chris making it, but it is a brilliant show. So it's quite special meeting the audience.
No, it's truly incredible. Take me back to 2 years ago. We had a conversation about ultra processed foods. Mm. What's the secret to your transformation? Because clearly something's changed, including the shape of your face.
So we haven't seen each other for several months, have we?
No.
And probably even then, it's probably coming up, what is it, eight months, something like that? Yeah. You said in the intro that I was overweight, but I was actually obese when I last saw you, or certainly the last time I was on this podcast, I was obese. And unhealthy with it. I mean, you talk about me being rumpled, but the whole thing was rumpled. My whole life was rumpled.
You kind of disguised that, I'd say, to a certain degree. Would you say you were happy in that position in your life?
No. I think it's difficult to talk about weight, isn't it? Because you're never just talking about weight. You're always talking about your self-esteem. And often you're talking about an eating disorder or some kind of very, very disordered relationship with food and with lots of bits of your life. And so what happened over the course of a couple of years, sort of a couple of very big things happened. One was that my brother and then I started doing a lot of work on ultra processed food, which we're still doing now. And he's got a book out that I'm in. But that book and the podcast we made, A Thorough Examination on the BBC, really changed my life. But whenever I say that, Dolly gets annoyed, and Dolly's like, not annoyed, but Dolly's like, that isn't the whole story. You got to tell the whole story.
Okay.
And of course, falling in love and having someone to do things with and having a reason why you want to be healthy is really different. So I lost a lot of weight in about a year and a half, but there was a moment where suddenly you could sort of see. I came back to work at Morning Live, which is a show I do on BBC One, and I'd been away for a couple of months. The show had been off air and I came back and people kind of went, whoa, you look totally different.
I remember seeing you last summer, because I think we'd hung out maybe in the March time, saw you a couple of months later, and it was like, wow, shock, different person. The glow, the lightness in your aura, as well as your visual.
So I felt very different. The strange moment about coming back to work and being thinner and feeling good was I hadn't realized quite what had happened to me, and I hadn't set out to lose weight. And everyone said, oh, well done. That's brilliant, brilliant work. You've lost all this weight. That's really good. And the weight was really focused on. And I thought, I didn't want to lose weight per se. What I'm happy about is that I'm able to be healthy. I've got all these opportunities to be healthy. I had the information on how to change what I was eating. I had someone to help me do it. My brother is one of the world experts in, you know, what people should eat, what drives obesity, what drives diet-related ill health. And so I just had this amazing opportunity to be healthy. But the big thing was I met someone where I suddenly went, oh, I'm not sure I do want to check out at 65. I'd like to actually now live forever. But I get emotional talking about it, but it's Dolly went, this is slightly disorganized the way I'm describing it, but I'll try and do it in the right order. But when Dolly moved in, she got up one morning and said, I'm going for a run. And I thought, I'm 44, why don't I go for a run? I used to be fit, like, what am I doing? And we went for a run, and I was in a panic the whole way. It was very undignified, and I was huffing and puffing, and I was really out of breath, and she ran very slowly.
Were you embarrassed?
I was embarrassed, but I actually just thought I was going to collapse, and I'd had my heart condition, and I was very worried about that. And we got in, and I burst into tears. I realized that I just hadn't expected to live a lot longer. I wasn't going to take my own life. I'm not sure I was even very depressed. I just thought, well, I'm 44, I'm going to be clocked out in 20 years' time and that'll be all right. And suddenly had this like, oh, I have to live my life differently, and was sort of terrified of what it all meant. The change in diet was not going, oh, I want to be thin. It was going, oh, I need to make better choices to be healthy. Does that sound very,
no,
I don't know.
It makes total sense. When you speak to people about motivation and mindset, often I've found in the conversations I've had through this podcast, those that are incentivized by whether it's performance, whether it's longevity of life, whether it's purpose, all seem to come to a better place of health because there's a reason behind it. It's not the fat, thin culture shock. I want to be this, I want to be that. There's more purpose, I think, behind anybody that has lost or gained significant weight.
Yeah. And I have a, like, willpower. Someone said to me, like, there's no such thing as willpower, right? Like, it's just sort of motivation, really, and opportunity. And if you have the opportunity to do a thing and you're motivated to do it, then you can do it. But people who lose weight often gain it back. Doesn't mean they haven't got willpower. Like, they've used huge amounts of willpower, but your motivation fluctuates over time.
So you get into a relationship with Dolly. Yeah. You slowly start making these changes, adding more exercise to your regime. I'm seeing you out in Australia. Myself and my friend, we were out there and we saw that you'd hike this peak before you'd to work. And it seems as though your lifestyle is a lot more active now.
Everything changed because I changed what I ate, and that took 18 months to make a big change. I didn't overnight change anything, but gradually I've been doing all this work with Chris, and we kept looking at this food, rubbish food that the supermarkets are filled with, full of additives, preservatives, colorings, flavorings, all this stuff that they design the food to make you eat too much of it. And it's not good for you in other ways. Like, you eat too much of it and it's bad for your gut and it's bad for your brain.
Yeah.
Gradually I got more and more irritated and just started chopping it out of my diet to the point where I kind of really went, I don't want to eat this stuff anymore.
What was it that made you decide I don't want it anymore? Because we spoke previously about the red coloured tube
and
when you smash up those crisps, actually what taste like. But was there a particular defining moment where you went, I actually don't want to put this shit in my body anymore?
It's the accumulated, I would say that the motivation was not a kind of always a positive, like, I'm going to be healthy, I'm going to feel good, so much as being so angry at the corporations doing this, so angry at the lack of opportunity to buy good food. It became like a war on the ultra processed food. You know, you'd be in a huge train station in the UK and just not able to buy fruit, nuts, cheese, anything kind of simple and any whole food. So I think it was as much that kind of anger and frustration going, why should I have to be forced to eat this rubbish, as much as going, I need to be healthy. But it was a combination of all those things. It was wanting to be healthy, wanting to live longer, wanting to feel better, and being pissed off about the food. And those things kind of gradually, the more ingredients lists I read, the more I was like, no, I'm going to have an apple instead.
Did you overnight just go, I'm not eating that anymore? Or was it a process of slowly eradicating those types of food?
It was very slow. So first of all, I was more interested. I made this podcast with my brother. I knew he was working on his book. I'd read multiple drafts of the book. And I kept looking at ingredients lists. Like, what, you can't stop. Once you realize it, you're like, what's in this bread? And you go, oh, it's got emulsifiers. It's got weird modified starch. It's got flavorings and colorings. And you're looking at ready meals going, what's going on here? And then you start looking at even a salad. And you're like, why has it got maltodextrin in it? Why has it got emulsifiers? Why does it have these strange extracts and flavorings? And the more you read ingredients lists, the more you start to sort of twitch and get irritated. So that was the process of gradually going, I'd eat it, but reluctantly, and it was a bit joyless. And then gradually you're like, oh, I think I'm just not enjoying this stuff anymore.
So something that was once addictive became essentially a nuisance to your everyday life because you just didn't want to buy it. Or
that's such a good way of putting it. It is odd that it went from being addictive to being repulsive over quite a long journey. It happens with smokers, I guess. Smokers start loving, you know, cigarettes are addictive, and gradually as you quit, the more you're exposed to how horrible tobacco companies are and all the harms. Eventually, if you speak to ex-smokers, usually they're not resisting cigarettes. Yeah. They think it's gross.
So what has been your secret in the sort of quite dramatic weight loss? It's not simple,
if someone's,
though, right?
No. It's very hard. And I don't have, obviously, if I could sort of bottle it and sell it, I'd be rich. But I would say there are a couple of things that are really counterintuitive and important. One is I stopped restricting myself on the food. There was no forbidden fruit. There was nothing that was a treat. There was nothing that was a special occasion. As part of the process of researching for the podcast and the book, Chris and I ate tons of ultra processed food. So I would get a bucket from a fried chicken shop, or I'd get a big bar of chocolate, whatever. Yeah. All the stuff that's like, whatever your weakness is, for me, it's Chinese takeaway, and just shovel it in while we were doing the research. And that was part of the program. It's like, eat as much as you want, take the breaks off, don't worry about it. But while you're doing that, read the book, listen to the podcast, speak to the scientists. For us, it was like interviewing scientists around the world, but that's all in the podcast. And you gradually, as you're eating it, you're like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? And if you really try and taste it, the food will set you free because it isn't actually very delicious. So that was one bit.
That's incredibly empowering.
Just
so
don't.
Permission, essentially.
It's all a treat. They sell it to you as a treat. So on the packet, it's like there's a treat, a grab bag, a little snack, a guilty pleasure. They want you to be like, oh, I shouldn't, but I should, but I shouldn't, but I should. And it should all feel like tomorrow the diet starts. And then you see a poster of some diet food and you're just yanked around by the marketing from these companies. And the minute you go, you know what? I'll start the day with a bar of dairy milk if I want to. Suddenly you can really go, do I actually want this?
Yeah.
It's not a guilty pleasure. It's not a treat. It's just one of many food options. I'm going to taste it the way I'd taste any other food. And you start to find it's a bit gross. That was my experience. So that was a big one.
Especially for breakfast.
Set yourself free. There's no limits. Because otherwise people are always, I would say everyone I know, maybe not everyone, but almost all the women I know and a lot of the men are permanently on some sort of diet or food restriction. Is that fair? Do you know what I mean?
I definitely think that's fair to say. One of the biggest things I think that I've come across recently is that everybody talks about diet culture.
Yeah.
And everybody in their own little way struggles in their corner and has their way of managing it. And I don't think there's any right or wrong, but what's helped me with my diet is knowing that everybody has to control their addictions to some certain extent.
Yeah. I think the entire time I was gaining weight, I was trying to lose weight. And I lost weight when I stopped trying to lose weight and just sort of went, right, I'm going to relax about this and think of what I actually want and not have any of the guilt or anxiety around food and meals that would drive. I'd starve myself and then order a huge meal. And instead, if you just go, look, if I, so the part of that was just going, provided I'm eating whole foods, I'll eat whatever I want. And then and then once you're eating a salad, you think, well, I'm not going to cover it in grated cheese. You know, it's sort of easy to, once you go, I want to eat whole foods, then you go, I'm probably not going to make myself a cheeseburger from scratch and bake the brioche and cover it in homemade mayonnaise. I'm probably just going to, you know, fry a piece of fish and throw it on a salad or something. And that's fairly easy. So it's sort of, that all took care of itself, but I didn't spend, it sounds so sanctimonious to go, oh, I didn't try and lose any weight. I think people are annoyed by it, but that is the honest truth, is there was no, that wasn't what I was trying to do.
And for those people that are listening to this, that maybe aren't aware of the term ultra processed foods, could you just explain a little bit about what they are and the effect they have on our body?
Sure. So if you Google ultra-processed foods now, you'll get a ton of conflicting information. It's sort of become like everything around food. It becomes a controversial topic. It's a controversial topic largely because the food companies need it to be controversial.
We're
because
talking moolah.
They add value to the food by doing the processing. Essentially, it's food with ingredients that you don't recognize, that you wouldn't have in a normal kitchen. And you can argue about all that, right? Like, maybe you've got some food coloring in your kitchen, but you don't use it in every, you don't put coloring if you're baking a pie for your family. You just bake a pie. If you're making a stew, you don't put coloring in it. So colorings, flavorings, additives, preservatives, all those things, emulsifiers, thickeners, binders, humectants, modified starches, all those things are put in the food to make money. And it's not that they're necessarily bad for you, right? There's lots of things we don't know. Are preservatives bad for you? Maybe yes, maybe no. But the fact that it has preservatives in is a bit of a clue that that food has been made not to nourish you and to make you healthy, but to make money for a company, right?
Yeah.
People complain the definition's woolly, but if it's wrapped in plastic, made to make money. You know, your broccoli isn't usually wrapped in plastic. If it's got health claims on it and marketing stuff, it's probably there to make money. If it's got all loads of weird ingredients, it's there to make money. Those are the sort of main ways you can think about it. If you couldn't make it at home and it doesn't have ingredients you use at home, it's probably ultra processed food.
So let's take some examples of what would be considered as ultra processed food.
Okay.
Pizza. So if you're in a nice Italian restaurant, would you have a pizza or would you opt for the salad?
It's such a good question. So I would say for me, pizza as a food is a traditional food that's been eaten for a long time in bits of the world where people live a long time and are perfectly healthy, right?
Yep.
Having a pizza can be a sort of five ingredient meal, right? Like flour, yeast, salt, tomatoes, cheese. That's five ingredients in a pizza. That's fine. You can make one at home. So if you want a pizza, just do that. But if you get a pizza from a frozen pizza from a supermarket, it will have preservatives, flavorings, colorings, weird binders and thickeners and all sorts of odd things in it. So it's pizza isn't good or bad. But if your body is eating a pizza that's just flour, yeast, cheese, and tomatoes, your brain actually knows pretty much when to stop eating that.
Yeah.
Like if you go and buy like a frozen pizza and go and get a good pizza from a good pizza restaurant that does it properly, you'll be full. You'll fill up on, and your brain will go, I'm done, I'm fine, I'm getting the normal signals. If it's full of monosodium glutamate, your brain will be like, I've got to eat more.
Talk to me a little bit more about that addiction and the effects of that and knowing when you're full. Because I can imagine your relationship with that feeling has changed as well.
Yes. And some of that must be to do with being happier.
We'll tap into that in a minute.
Okay, so the way, if you think of a can of cola, if you drink a can of warm, flat cola,
yeah,
it's disgusting, right? Your body does not want it. You can't usually finish it. So the way that they get you to drink more cola, you start with sweetened water, but sugar water on its own is not very nice. So then you have to add acid. And if you can add acid, they add phosphoric acid. If you add phosphoric acid, that means you can increase the sugar content so that your body is getting a real sugar hit, which your brain responds to very strongly. If you then carbonate it, you can add even more sugar because the fizziness disguises the sugar. And if you cool it down, you can smuggle tons of sugar into your body. So you've got a cold, fizzy, acidic drink. You can pour sugar in that your body would absolutely reject if you just had a glass of warm sugar water. You'd be like, this is horrible. So, and then the flavorings help it further. And that hit of sugar is what's addictive. And so you come back to the cola because you're getting this buzz from the sugar, but the buzz is just engineered into a drink that your body doesn't really want. So if you go, I'm not gonna drink cola, I'm gonna drink tea, coffee, milk, I don't know, homemade lemonade, like normal drinks. You don't drink 20 cups of homemade lemonade. You have it on a hot day and you're done and that's fine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like,
totally.
That's how the addiction, I mean, the other weird thing about the addiction, that's sort of how they get you with the addiction. So instant noodles.
Yeah.
Do you know that feeling of like you have an instant noodle and then you're like, oh, I still need more, like I'm not satisfied?
I find that with crisps, say, you know, once you start, it's like you couldn't eat that much, say, roasted chicken and veg.
Yeah.
But you could absolutely pound, or I could popcorn, crisps with all the dips. Yeah. And you can just keep going and going.
But that's because they've been
tampered with, right?
Well, they are tampered with. So typically what they've got is things like monosodium glutamate, which makes your body expect a nutritious meal, that's an amino acid, or it signals the presence of amino acids. It's just a flavor enhancer. When you have that on your tongue, your body readies itself for like a protein rich, you know, healthy meal.
Yeah.
And then you don't get that. You just get sort of sugar and salt or a bit of fat, whether it's crisps or instant noodles or anything else. And so you keep eating them. But if you make homemade popcorn, you eat much less of it.
Dolly on the homemade popcorn.
We literally took it. We took homemade popcorn to the cinema last night, and it was just like not like we didn't finish it. Whereas normally I'm like tipping it up.
Like this.
Literally. And I don't know how to.
Would you eat any of that stuff now still? Or are you like done? You don't want to touch it?
Like in restaurants, you end up going for dinner with people and you end up going, I don't know what's in this food. And I'm not going to call the waiter over and demand to meet the chef and ask what's in it. I'm just going to eat it and not worry about it. But if I'm choosing and I'm in control, I prefer not to. But I'm not an extremist. And people think that I'd be very judgmental about what they're eating. And it's like, I'm giving you all the, like you said, how do you lose weight? And I'm like, I don't even like to answer that question, because for most people in the UK, it is almost impossible to lead a healthy life. Like we talk about choices, there aren't choices, right? Like if you're on a low income, if you're time poor because you're working multiple jobs, like what can you do?
It's funny because as a former athlete, I used to live a lifestyle where essentially you're biohacking the system.
Yeah.
And then you transition out of that and you're thrust into everyday life and you're a little bit more relaxed about it. But there's certain elements of that lifestyle previously, which I've adopted recently myself again, where I will prepare and I will bring some oats so I don't have to eat the ones that are filled with a load of sugar.
Right.
So there's, I think there's definitely ways around it that don't have to be expensive. But I think the knowledge is power in the decision making. And I think that is where the majority of people just do not have the information, because it's not readily available. And there is so much information put out there from the likes of the NHS that isn't necessarily on topic to what would be conducive to what I believe is a healthy lifestyle. Everybody has a different opinion.
It is confusing because you get very conflicting advice, which is why I quite like just going, don't eat food with a load of weird stuff in it. I think the reason Chris's book is a massive bestseller is because the central message is this food's a rip-off and it's terrible for you.
Yeah.
But even with things like you bringing oats is a great example. Oats are inexpensive, and you know the plastic cups of oats with all the additives and flavorings, they're, you know, you'll eat more of them. An apple in Tesco, if you buy a single apple, which you might, you don't want to buy a whole bag of
could
apples.
Could be 70p.
65p in Tesco today.
70p in Marks.
Is it? Yeah. So that doesn't surprise me. And in Selfridges, you can pay £2 for an apple. But anyway, got to be relatable. And so, but 400-gram packet of custard creams is 45p. Now, if you've got a bunch of kids on a road trip, or you're just trying to buy some snacks for the office, what are you going to do? You're going to buy the biscuits.
Of course
you are.
That's far more exciting.
People can gain weight eating whole foods, right? Like if you cook yourself a big tray of biscuits and eat them all, there'll be a lot of calories there. But we know that you will eat, even if you match that diet for fat, salt and sugar, you'll eat less if it's not ultra processed.
Let's talk about exercise and glucose spiking.
Okay, come on.
So there's a lot of devices now that we all are moving towards. Some of them have the ability to track things like glucose spiking. Others are just step counters, heart rate monitors. What do you think about this new obsession in us wearing these technological devices on our wrists? Are they conducive to better health, or do you think they could be a negative effect on our mental health?
I mean, certainly I have a ton of friends who've gone on the apps, got the blood glucose monitor and are tracking it all. I'm not.
That's nice to hear.
And there's no, if you're doing that and that's working for you, that's great. And people do it for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
There isn't brilliant evidence that that is good for your health if you don't have diabetes.
Yeah.
I'm worried that it is so confusing. It is so confusing to be healthy and so expensive to be healthy that a trend towards telling people they need a personalized diet regime seems to me to muddy the waters even further. And it's like, it's so hard for anyone to make a good choice. So I quite like, I like things to be really simple and just going, traditional diets all over the world are associated with good health, whether it's Japanese food, Greek food, you know, Mediterranean food. They're all like, just, they're based in whole foods. So if you just eat minimally processed or whole foods that you've cooked at home that don't have a load of weird stuff in it, that seems to me to be straightforward, and there's loads of evidence that that's good for you.
Yeah.
And wearing a blood sugar monitor, I don't think there's enough evidence to charge as much as a lot of these companies do. But maybe that will emerge. But personally, I would wait. I would really want to wait and see before I spent that money. Spend the money on fruit and veg.
Yeah.
That's going to, you know, some of them, I think some of the apps are like £20-30 a month, maybe more.
That's ridiculous.
Just spend the money on fruit and veg. It's so expensive to buy fruit and veg.
Can you explain a little bit about glucose spiking and the type of foods that would shoot that in that direction?
People react really differently to different foods, and your body really wants everything inside your body to stay the same, whether it's glucose, sodium, potassium, everything in your blood pretty much wants it to be even. Unless you have diabetes, you have very good hormonal control of all these things. And so the spikes we're talking about are not huge. A spike, it's like a little blip.
Yeah.
Goes up and then it comes down. So loads of things will spike your glucose that aren't food. If you get in a road rage incident, if you have a very stressful moment in your life, extreme grief will spike your glucose because your stress hormones affect your blood glucose. One of the ways that your body copes with stress is by releasing glucose in your body as part of the sort of fight or flight response. So the evidence that this is bad for you is really minimal. It comes out of the idea that if you have poorly controlled diabetes, we know that that is associated with lots of health problems. But having normal blood glucose spikes throughout the day, whether it's, you know, eating a baguette or whether it's from stress or worry, but those things are normal and burst out normally through your life, there isn't evidence that that is what harms you or that removing those things will be good. So it doesn't feel to me reasonable to expect your body to maintain your blood glucose exactly the same at all the time. And so I just don't think there's evidence that that's like a thing that you should spend your time worrying about. And maybe evidence will emerge and I'll be happy to read it. But for the moment, that evidence doesn't exist. Am I answering your question? Like, you think your glucose is going to spike if you eat a load of sweets.
Yeah.
But your body's quite good at processing sugar. A lot of people won't get a spike from that, but they'll get a spike from something else.
But the prolonged effect of eating that every single day would then obviously have an effect.
Maybe. But if you're eating a diet that is full of whole foods, fruit and vegetables, fiber, we know that's good. It's such a delicate thing to try and explain. You're asking, if you get repeated blood sugar spikes from a particular food, surely it would be good to eliminate it.
Yeah.
That seems like it would be logical because we know that high blood sugar protracted over a long period of time, if you have diabetes, is bad for you. But if that advice leans towards going, don't eat fruit, I'm like, I don't know. Fruit's quite good for you. There's lots of evidence that fruit's good for you.
I'd beg to differ on that as well.
So
love my fruit.
I sort of feel like as soon as the advice is going, don't eat certain things that are normal and we think of as being good for you, I'm left going, I show me the evidence that it's true. For 20, 30 pounds a month, I'd really like you to prove it.
Dan, talk to me about your life now. We often talk about routine on this podcast. I want to know how your wellness routine has changed with getting married and your move towards a healthier lifestyle.
I would say the main thing is that I have a buddy, that I'm married and I have someone to do things with. And so my wellness routine now is different, but it's not like I'd love to go, oh, you should do what I do.
Yeah.
But I get up in the morning and play ping pong with my wife in the park. Well, that's an amazingly luxurious thing to be able to do, but it's because she's right there next to me.
That is incredible.
So those things also going to, I mean, but it doesn't feel like a wellness regime. It feels like just being in a happy marriage. I mean, I'll tell you what will mess it all up is children. So anyone listening to me is like, haha, just you wait. And that's what my brother says. Chris is like, just you wait. He's got two children. It's all going to stir it up.
Yeah.
So who knows, you know, come and talk to me in 2 years' time and see what kind of state I'm in then.
You said about your run a year and a half ago. Now, are we likely to see you out running?
Oh, yeah. So I've been doing...
So it's not just ping pong, Dan.
No, I see what you mean. Do you mean like my training regime? Like what I'm doing,
what
the whole picture?
Yeah, I want to know what you're doing.
It's very messy though. So it's, yes, but
this
but
is why it's relatable. And this is what I get asked a lot. So this is why I want to hear it.
Okay, so this is not, I always feel like often if you're a doctor, people ask you for advice and I'm like, I don't have any advice. I don't know anything.
We're just having a chat
You do. That's good. That's nice. That's good. That's all I want is to have a chat.
Yeah.
I'll just describe my thing, but it's not. So 2 days of the week, I get up at about 5 a.m. and so I'm just exhausted all day. So on those days, I might like try and go for a walk would be amazing. Or like if I can just eat reasonably well those days and not eat too much, that's amazing.
It's hard with the early mornings, isn't it?
It's so hard. Because you just want to eat loads of carbs and you just feel terrible. Like you can't escape. Like I'm saying not ultra processed food, but I mean, if I've got up at 5 a.m., I definitely want to have a big old pile of carbs. And that's just your cortisol levels putting everything out of whack and messing you up. So Monday and Tuesday are a mess. Then Wednesday, I'm sort of recovering from that. But often I'm traveling and I'm on the road. So if I can possibly get on my exercise bike twice a week, I'm really pleased. If I can go for a jog or a run once a week, I'm really thrilled. I haven't managed to lift any weights in weeks, which I should be doing, but I'm just never around the weights and I always want to do something. I like doing the cardio and I find the weights a bit boring. And then I might do, like Dolly will often say, can we just do half an hour of yoga? And so we might do that like in the evening, just half an hour of very stress-free yoga. That's quite fine. I never did that before, but that is, I never want to do it. And then after I've done it, I'm always happy.
What makes you happy about that?
The breathing. I think the breathing is really nice.
That's the bit I find the hardest.
You have to like it's just half an hour of concentrating on a thing and you sort of forget everything else that's going on. But that's sort of nice about all the exercise. The best thing is the ping pong. I've got to say, ping pong, if I could recommend one thing that's like free, there's tables everywhere, it's really fun, and most people can do it enough. Like, you can do it at any age.
Yeah.
I would say ping pong's not a bad one.
You like ping pong, you need to come and play paddle tennis.
Is that good?
It's unreal.
But I worry with all these things that I'm going to be bad at them.
It doesn't matter whether you're good or bad. It's about enjoyment and mass movement.
What is it? Like, can you play it anywhere or do I need a special court?
You sort of need a court. That's the issue. Glass walls, it's like squash and tennis combined. At a fast pace with four people, so it's social. It's a great game with your mates.
I'd be up for that.
I'm calling a doubles game with you and Dolly.
I'll do that. I mean, Dolly's a real athlete. Like, she can do it.
I know.
I've
seen Dolly on a trampoline.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you see her on a trampoline?
In May. You weren't there.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, what when you did this? Yeah, okay, I know about that.
Yeah.
That's really funny. God, it's quite interesting having these conversations. Like, they're much more, like, I show up thinking I'm just going to have a lovely chat with my friend. And actually, they're quite, for me, like, quite emotional, intense, like weight loss, diet, exercise, like, they're all things, the stakes all seem quite high. Do you find it like, I've done most of the talking. But
I find I learn a lot coming out of these podcasts. There's so many things that I've taken away and taken from my guests and newfound knowledge. So yeah, it's an incredible opportunity to walk, be outside and learn something new about somebody else.
The walking is so, you just have a totally different conversation when you're walking.
You
it's
really
so
do,
amazing.
Don't you?
It's so amazing.
One thing I wanted to ask was, you mentioned your brother and how he is essentially excelling in that field of sharing the knowledge of ultra processed foods. Is he proud of your transformation?
So that is actually a sort of not exactly sore point, but we made a podcast for the BBC about kind of my, you know, he tried to take me on and make me lose weight, and that didn't work because nagging people doesn't work. You got to let them do their own thing. You know, you can't hassle people, set them free. He was one of the big barriers to me being healthy, was him nagging me. Anyway, through that podcast, I met Dolly because she was one of the people that he interviewed. You know, everything turned out that the tables have turned. So now he's been writing his book, kind of stuck at home, kids, stressful life, and he's gained weight. He's much less fit. And we're just making series three of the podcast. And the beginning bit is this huge fight where we just got into a massive row where I sort of went, do you think the tables have turned a bit? And what could we do about that? And he started yelling at me and getting really annoyed because he sort of felt that I was doing to him what he'd been doing to me for 20 years. So we love each other. We get along very well. But, you know, it is family relationships and twin relationships where you've got weight and health and food and everyone loves each other and is worried about each other. It's not straightforward to navigate. So I've really had to not nag him and give him a hard time and just sort of make life a bit easier for him. And also through making it, I really get, like, I'm so humble about it because he's raising these two kids. They're so brilliant and he's so busy doing that and his book's going so well. So not nagging people is it's impossibly difficult to do, but I'm really trying to do it. But
I think that's an extremely big takeaway and it's something that I need to take on board myself because my weight loss journey myself, even, you know, everyone thinks you've got it all dialed and sorted because you're an athlete, but one day you're an athlete, the next day you're not, and you can eat pizza and chips. And it's managing the balance of that relationship with food. And I just think it's not easy. And that's a conversation we've had before.
Mm.
I don't think it's easy for anyone. And I think that's one of the first steps in understanding the journey is it's not easy.
That's a really nice way of putting it.
I think it's the truth. And I think the way in which you've explained your relationship with your weight loss, there is no right or wrong way and there is no set plan. But one thing that I've taken away from this is that I'm not going to go home on the tube tonight and smash a pizza from Domino's.
No. No, but also don't imagine that I want anyone to lose weight. Do whatever works for you. Your weight is not the main thing that determines your health. That to me is so important. But I think, if you want a pizza, just have a good pizza. Don't have a bad pizza. Don't have a pizza made by a huge corporation that needs you to gain weight. Get a pizza made by an Italian family in a small restaurant that needs to make money and feed themselves.
And I'm not going to ask you what your relationship is like with Monday, because I'm going to direct everyone to the podcast 2 years ago.
Oh, did we? I don't know.
To have a listen. We ask every single guest what their relationship is like with Monday.
What did I say?
Or do we do it? What is your relationship with Monday, Zan?
Monday at the moment, I make Morning Live for BBC One. I love it to bits. And so I have to get up too early on a Monday, but I don't get the Sunday blues too badly. I quite look forward to Mondays.
I don't think you said that before.
Oh, goodness.
So there we go.
No.
No, but things change.
Things change.
Life changes.
There you go. Things change. That's the update.
We are constantly a revolving evolution of life, right?
That's true.
It is too true. And lastly, Zan, do you have any life mottos or quotes that you can share with our listeners that might help them take that first step in making that lifestyle change?
There's sort of grand quotes, and then there's like everyday little rules of thumb. If you can't pronounce it, don't eat it, I think is quite a helpful one. Like, I think about that all the time. Like, read the ingredients, I think about all the time. There's one quote, this will sound maybe pretentious, but there's a quote by a guy called Reinhold Niebuhr, who's an American, like, theologian, religious expert guy. And he's got a long quote, but one of the bits of it, he says, I can't do it off by heart, but it's like, nothing worth doing can be accomplished alone. Although he says it better than me, nothing worth doing can be accomplished in one person's lifetime. And you're enemies are not as bad as you think they are, and the people you think are brilliant aren't as good as you think they are. And he kind of rounds it off by saying, in the end, we're all saved by love and forgiveness. He puts it better than me, but go and look, anyone can find the quote. If you look up Reinhold Niebuhr, you'll find it. Whenever I'm sort of having a hard time, I'm like, oh, the stakes are a bit lower. I can't do it all in one lifetime. I can't do it on my own, and nothing's as bad as it seems. Love is the only thing that will get you through. That's sort of where I land most days.
That's beautiful. I like that a lot. Dr. Zan, thank you so much for joining us again on the Monday Mile podcast. It's an absolute honour.
It's so lovely to see you. Can I get a hug?
Let's
Last
have
time
a little
you made
hug.
Me do jumps on a bench.
I did. I'm not going to do that this time.
I feel like this time I'm like, I could do it, and so I don't need to.
You don't need to.
But last time it was nice. You sort of shook me up a bit and was like,
well,
on,
you're
going to
take
bit.
Me for a ride on your tandem now. Come Monday on. Mile listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. I really, really hope you did enjoy it. And you know what? Do go back through the archive and have a little listen, because things really have changed for Dr. Sand. And I've taken a lot of inspiration from listening to this conversation, so I hope you have too. You know what to do. Make sure you do subscribe. Each episode drops at 1 a.m. every single Monday morning. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap.